Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Hello, Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf Yomi. Chulin Kuf Lametes. We are three lines off the top of the Amud, and back to the Mishnah, where we exempted a Mugdashan bird, so a bird which is a Hegdish possession, like a Karban or something which belongs to Bedek Habayis, the building fund, is exempt from the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKan. The question is like this. We're a little bit of a dilemma here. You see, in order to make something Hegdish, you have to own it. It has to be yours. In order to even consider Shiloh HaKan, it has to be ownerless. So how can both elements come together? How could it be something which is Hegdish and still be a candidate for Shiloh HaKen, which requires exemption? But if it's a candidate for Shiloh HaKen, inevitably, it has to be Hefker. If it's Hefker, it's not going to be Hegdish. So how do both factors coexist? That's the dilemma we're facing. Okay, so that's the first kash in the Gemara. Hanu Mugdosh. It's on the third line. Hanu Mugdosh Nechidami. How do you have a Hegdish bird which has both? It's Hegdish and it is a suitable candidate, theoretically, for Shloha Ken, which needs to be ownerless. Hanu Mugdosh Nechidami. Ilei Madavale Kan Vesech Beisei Vagdashay. First option would be he had a bird nest in his house, in his possession. He donated it to Hegdish. Okay, fine. So far, so good. So it becomes Hegdish, but there's no Shloh HaKain for a bird that you own, irrespective of its Hegdish status. There's no Shloh HaKain unless it's Hefker. Mimachai, why would it be obligated in Shloh HaKain? Ki karei kansipur. Pasuk says, clearly you encountered it by chance. It's not yours. Problem is open as opposed to something which is yours and under your control. Okay, so that option doesn't work. Option number two. Ela dechazak kein ba'am. He noticed some random nest, which he does not own. Ve'agdashay. So he decided to make it Hegdish. Okay, so it qualifies for Shloh HaKein because it's Hefker, but the question is, how does it become Hegdish? It's not yours. You could only be Magdish something which belongs to you. Umi Kaddish, since when does it become Kaddish? Yish ki Yagdish es beisoy. Kodesh. Amar Rahman, the pasuk in describing the Hegdish process refers to one's home as a classic example. And we learn that it has to be similar to one's house. Amar Rahman, ma beisav rishusay. Just like your home is yours, belongs to you, av kol b'rishusay. Likewise, Hegdish can only be applied to something which belongs to you. Okay, so this one is a candidate for Shloha Kain, but you can't make it Hegdish. Third option, Elo, so it must be, Dagibihinu Lefreichem. So he encounters this ownerless Hefker bird nest, and he picked up the chicks, and he acquired it. He was Zeichem. And now he decided to make it Kodesh. Magdashinu. So he lifted it, made it Kodesh. Vahodadrinu, then he placed it back in the nest. It started as Hegdish, but then he acquired it. It started as Hefker, ownerless, then he picked it up, he acquired it, he made it Hegdish. Too late, now it's yours. It's no longer obligated. In Shiloh HaKen, back to the first question, even if this was not Hegdish, if it was a regular bird, it wouldn't be Chayav in Shiloh HaKen because it already belongs to you. And something which is owned has no Shiloh HaKen. The Tana, it's not as we have in the Mishnah. He picked up the offspring and put it back. And then the mother bird comes back on them. Patam Shalech is exempt because it is no longer Hefker. Fourth option. So these options don't work. Elo da'agwale. Oh, he didn't touch the offspring. He didn't touch the eggs. He didn't touch the chicks. Rather, he picked up the mother bird. Vaglisha, and made it Hegdish. So it started as Hefker. Picked up the mother, made it Hegdish. Vahadra, and then she came back to the nest. Okay, so now he has it all together. The birds are not, the nest is not owned, it's Hefker, qualifies for Shloch HaKein, but since the mother is Hegdish, you can't send it away, right? Says the Gemara, actually not so, Mikara. Initially when he noticed this nest with, you know, Ichayv LeBishiluach, that activated, that triggered the obligation of Shiluach, Mikami Da'agdish, before he made it Hegdish. And once the obligation kicks in, you can't just dissipate it by making it Hegdish. The Sanya, we have a similar halacha regarding Kisi Hadam, which also does not apply to Hegdish, and still we find that if the mitzvah was activated prior to this fellow turning it into Hegdish, then mitzvah stays. It doesn't walk away. The Sanya, Rabbi Yechina ben Yosef Aymer, Hegdish Chaya, took an animal, made it Hegdish, and then shechted it. V'achakach shechta patam l'chasa. There's no Kisi Hadam, because during the moment of Shechita, it was already Hegdish. But suppose Shachta, he first did the Shechita, which activates the Kisui Hadam, and then he was Magdish, too late. Why is he obligated in Kisui? Because he was already obligated to do Kisui before, prior, Shiyavai, with the Hegdish before, it turned into Hegdish. Likewise, now a case. Once he noticed the Kansipar, which at this point is Hefker, he's Chayiv in Shiluach HaKein. So even though he turned it into Hegdish, it stays Chayiv. So bottom line, what are we talking about? What's the Mishnah's case? Mishnah, which speaks about a nest which is a candidate for Shiluach HaKein, but is exempt because of Hegdish. Says the Gemara, you know what happened? It was initially his birds. He turned it into Hegdish. And then the birds just took off, flew off. He lost control. He lost ownership. Now it becomes Hefker. It becomes Ki Kari Kansipur. It's Einu Mezumin. It's uncontrolled. It's out of his possession. It's a perfect candidate for Shloch HaKein. Oh, so why not? Because it still maintains its Hegdish status from before, which did not dissipate just because the bird flew off. It still maintains its Hegdish. Here you have a candidate for Shloch HaKein, but it's exempt because it's of its Hegdish status. Now we have two variations of this case. Either he was Magdish it inherently Kaddish, like a Karban, Kedusha Sagof, the bird for Oila. So although it took off, it will maintain that Hegdish status. Or, according to the other opinion, it's speaking even by Hegdash Bedech Habayis. He donated it, you know, monetarily for the, you know, treasury, for the building fund. Same story, even though it flew off and he lost control, the Kedushas Bedech Habayis still is maintained. More later will tell us, because even though it's a monetary type of ownership, and you would think that depends on control and access. No. Yeah, regarding personal ownership, yeah, it depends on your access and your control, but Hashem's ownership, Lashem ha'aretz emaloya, to Hashem, the world and all its content. So wherever that bird is, it's still in the possession of Hegdish of Hashem, and therefore the Hegdish status doesn't get lost. Okay, so it's basically the same concept with two variations. He was Magdish and then he lost control, which makes it Hefker in terms of his personal ownership. Makes it a candidate for Shloch HaKein, but it's exempt because it's Hegdish. And that could be either through Hegdish Bedek HaBayis or through Hegdish Mizbeach. We have Rav and Shmuel. So first is Rav Omar, but Magdish Peiroiz Shevach. We're speaking that he donated the products of his birdhouse, you know, the pigeons, as a carbon material. And then they rebelled, they flew off, lost control. Okay, now he encounters it on the road. It's a perfect candidate for Shloch HaKein, but it's exempt because it's Hegdish. It belongs in the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't belong being sent away. Ushmol Amar, he says, but Magdish Katarn Negoy Losoy, the Bedek HaBayis, speaking that he donated his chicken. Even though a chicken needs Shloch HaKein, Shloch HaKein is not just by birds, even by chickens. If it's a random, you know, ownerless chicken, Shloha Kein. See a chicken sitting on her eggs. Shloha Kein. Take away, send away the chicken, keep the eggs. Okay. And they add the word umarda, and it rebelled, it took off on him, so he lost control, so it's hefker, and it's chayv shloha kein, if not for the fact that it's hegdish. So that resolves our question. Right? The question initially was, how could you have both together? A confluence of both factors. It's his, so that he can be magdish, but then it's not his, for the sake of shloha kein. The answer is, initially it was his when he was magdish, then it took off, he lost ownership, and now it's hefker and requires shloha kein, but it's exempt because of its hegdish status. Now I'm going to explain why each opinion opted for his own position as opposed to his opponents. Bishleima Shmuel Amakarav, I understand why Shmuel, who picked Bedek Abayis, did not go with Rav, who picked Kodesh Mizbeach. Karban Kedusha. To come back from Lubakash Bedek Abayis, he wanted to highlight that even if it's just Hegdish Bedek Abayis, which is a limited monetary Kedusha, it still maintains its status despite having taken off. El Rav, my time alone with Shmuel. Why did Rav not go with Shmuel to teach us this extra point? Amalach Rav. Rav really disagrees with Shmuel's assertion. He says, Dafkad Kapatra Mishaluach, Kigon Peri Shavocha, the Kodesh Mizbeach Ninu. I maintain that this whole concept only applies by birds that were donated as a korban, Kodesh Mizbeach Ninu. So although it took off and he lost control, that's in terms of financial control, but inherent kedusha does not get affected by just flying away. The kibun the kachik kedusha aguf, since they're inherently kadosh, it's meant for a carbon, like paka kedusha sayu minayu. The kedusha does not leave it just because the animal flew off. Whereabouts, location is irrelevant to its kedusha, and that's why it's exempt from shloha kein. Alav magdish and gosel kabayis. But in your case, where he's magdish, limited for bedek kabayis, the love kachim is beach. It's not inherently kaddish as a carbon. The kedusha is dumb and ba'alma. It's just monetarily kaddish. It's for its value. And I maintain, says Rab, the kivan, the morda, once it rebels and it leaves your possession, you lost control, you have lost financial interest in it. Paka kedusha sayu. It loses its kedusha, which was dependent upon access and financial interest and control. In which case, chayev shloha kein. It's no longer hegdish. Very interesting machlekes. Shmuel counters by saying, no, I maintain that even kedusha is bedek abayis, which is a monetary element of kedusha, will still hang on despite the bird flying wild. Because wherever that bird is, he thinks it's just a free bird. No, bebe gaza, in the treasury, the Rachman of Hashem, he is. Tachsev, as the pasuk says, we say it every morning by Shir Shal Yayin. We say it like a chant, but it's it has a lachic ramifications. Hashem Oretz Emeloya. Rashi says, Einon Avudin, he's not lost. We're not lost people. We're under Hashem's watchful eye. Shebuchal Mokim Shehem Shal Hegdishain. Wherever they are, they're Hegdish. Evchenu Rabbi Yechonon, Rechon likewise concurs with Shmuel's opinion that Hegdish's reach is universal. B'magdish Tarnuk Goylosul Bedek Abayis Umard. We're speaking about Bedek Abayis Hegdish, and even though it rebelled and ran away, it still maintains its Kedusha. Amalei Reb Shimon Lakish, this time it's Rish Lakish, taking issue with Rabbi Yechonon's Chiddush. Says, how could you say it maintains its Kedusha? It's running wild, it's out of control. You have no financial access to it anymore. But Kivan Shemar, that once it rebels, Pakalei Kedusha, so doesn't it lose its Kedusha? Amalei says, no, same thing. Bebe Gazad Rachman Issa, it's still on Hashem's treasury. Tachsiv L'Hashem Aretz Malaya. Okay, so that resolves our issue with the Mishnah. Shiloh HaKein of Kadoshim, right, is exempt from Shloha Kein. So speaking that it was his initially, and he was Magdish, and then it ran off, still maintains its Kedusha, despite being Hefker. So it would be Chayiv in Shloha Kein, but it's partly because it is Kodesh. Now we shift to a slightly different element of this topic, which relates to these, the points that we just raised. How far-reaching is Hegdish's jurisdiction? And this has halachic ramifications regarding responsibility. What degree of responsibility does a donor have in terms of seeing through his donation until it's delivered to the Beis HaMikdash? For instance, let's say he donates some money for Bedek HaBayis. He says, I am committing to... And somebody swipes it, somebody takes it away. Is it the donor's responsibility to replace it, to see it through? Or perhaps he can say, look, that's Rabbi Yechon's opinion. He can say, look, Hashem Aretz Malaya, whether it's in my pocket or in the thief's pocket, it's still in Hashem's hand, so there's no change really, and I fulfilled my obligation. Right? So that's one way to look at it. On the other hand, you can say, no, you personally committed to getting this money to, you know, to its proper recipient, to the Beis HaMikdash, and you haven't done so. So let's see. And this machlokes revolves around, you know, the same principles. Now, actually, we're going to seem to have a contradiction within the two Rabbi Yechanans. Because here Rabbi Yechanan says, Hashem Aretz Maloya, wherever he is, he's in Hashem's jurisdiction. And elsewhere, he seems to say otherwise. And likewise, V'rami the Rav Shimon Lakish, we have an apparent contradiction between our Rish Lakish, who didn't seem to agree with this Hashem Aretz Maloya application, Adar Shimon Lakish, and the other Rish Lakish, who seem to adopt it very much, as we have learned. Mama Zeh, for Bedek HaBayis. Okay, I'm pointing to this $100. This is going to be a donation to Bedek HaBayis. V'nignavu, I nevdu, got lost or stolen. Rabbi Yechon Amar Chai V'char Yusan. He's not exempt. He can't absolve himself from responsibility. He is fully responsible until it's delivered to its proper address. Ad shiavoy de gizmo, until it gets to the treasurer. This seems to be a direct contradiction to the previous Rabbi Yechanan, who says, look, he didn't get lost. It's still in Hashem's jurisdiction, right? For Shlakish Amar, Shlakish goes the other way. Kalecha do you say, it sounds like he's echoing Rabbi Yechanan's earlier position. No, don't worry. Wherever it is, it's still in Hashem's hands, safe and sound. Because Rachmona Yisrei, Tachsiv, oh, Hashem Aretz Malaya. This presents us with a double contradiction. Earlier, Rabbi Yechanan adopted the Hashem Aretz Malaya position, and here he seems to oppose it. Rish Lakish goes the other way. Initially, he opposed it, now he adopts it. Kasha, the Rish Lakish, the Rish Lakish. Kasha, the Rabbi Yechanan. We have a double contradiction. Answer. The Rish Lakish, the Rish Lakish, like Kasha. We can resolve our sluggish like this. Initially, he opposed that position. Then he heard it from his Rebbe. Rabbi Yechon was his Rebbe, and he adopted it. Ha, mikamei deshami, Rabbi Yechon Rabbi. Earlier, it was prior to hearing it from his Rebbe. So he took issue, questioned it. Ha, labasar deshami, Rabbi Yechon Rabbi. And the most recent discussion took place after he heard it and absorbed it, internalized it from his Rebbe. That resolves that. How about Rabbi Yechon's contradiction? El Rabbi Yechon, Rabbi Yechon Lakash. Answer it. Rabbi Yechon, Rabbi Yechon, Lami Lakash. That also could be resolved. Depends what term he used when he obligated himself. We all know there's a big difference between saying, me, a lie, I am responsible. It's a personal obligation. He has to see it through till the end. Versus pointing to the item and making an item-based commitment. This will go to Beis HaMikdash. Look, I'm not responsible for it. It belongs to the Mikdash, whoever he is, right? Hadamar a lie. Hadamar harizu. This Rabbi Yechon over here, most recent one, who seems to say that he's responsible to see it through. That's when he said, "Hari a lie. I am going to donate this money. I'm going to donate money." So he has to make sure that it gets to the Beis HaMikdash. As opposed to a case where it was item-based, like in the previous discussion, there you can just say, look, Hashem Aretz Malay, wherever he is, it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. It's not a personal obligation. I donated it, and my job's done. Hadamar Alay, Hadamar Rizu. Okay, so in the most recent discussion, it was a real lie. That explains where Rabbi Yechanan does not allow the person to just absolve himself by setting it aside. You have to see it through to the end. Now, Rish Lakish seemed to have taken a more lenient approach, even than Rabbi Yechanan, in this regard. And even in a real lie, which is a personal commitment, he's scot-free as soon as he designates it. That's a big, huge chiddush. I mean, you're personally obligated. How could you just absolve yourself by saying, look, I put it aside, I'm not responsible. You are. Mechalal de Reb Shimon Lakish, afagav de Omar alay le mechayev? Do you mean that, could the Reish Lakish, even when he said a lie, he's absolved? He doesn't have to see it through to the end? V'atanya v'atanam, we have this famous, well-known Mishnah Maseches Megillah, which explains the difference between a lie, which is a personal obligation, which requires him to see it through till the end, versus harezu, which is just an item-based. But if it's personal, you have to see it through. V'atanam, harezu neder, v'ezo yinidava, how do you define neder and nedava? What's the difference? Neder is personal. He says, harei olai oila, I am going to give a oila. In that case, Rashi says he has to make sure to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, the Azara. Nedava, on the other hand, is just an item-based donation. And the Mishnah explains itself. What's the halachic difference between the two? In a neder, which is a personal commitment, the animal died or was stolen, he has to look after it, he has to replace it, it's a personal obligation. As opposed to a neder, which is an item-based donation, as soon as he designates it, he's off the hook. Gets lost, stolen, or he doesn't have to replace it. If we're talking about Harei Olai, how can Reish Lakish say you're exempt if it gets stolen? Amar Reish Lakish says Reish Lakish, Hani mil kachim esbeach. The Mishnah, which indicates that a lie is a bigger obligation, a bigger chiyuv. You have to see it through to the end. That's by kachim esbeach, by a korban, the mechusar hakrova, which is lacking hakrova, meaning, Rashi explains, in that case, the understanding of a lie is very different. What he's saying is, I am going to deliver it to the Beis HaMikdash, make sure it is processed as a korban. So there I agree. But unless you see this through to the end, he's not exempt. Aval kotcha b'deka bias, but a mere donation to the treasury, the la mechus hakrov, which is not lacking hakrov, but it's not a korban process, it's just a monetary commitment. Even if he said a lie, I am giving the 100. As soon as he sets it aside, it's over with. Because right now, it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So it's the Beis HaMikdash's issue, not mine. Lemechayev, but not. Oh, here comes a kasha. Oimer shor ze oila by ze carbon. Fellow points to a shor, a bull. He says, this is for oila. This house is a carbon. Rashi says, carbon here means a donation to Beit HaKabayis, which is also called carbon. Something goes wrong with the item. Not my responsibility. If the bull dies, the house collapses. He's not responsible to replace it. But I am going to bring the shor. I am responsible for the bias to be done. In this case, he's responsible. Something goes wrong with the items. He has to replace it. So clearly, even regarding Beit HaKabayis, his obligation extends until fruition. How could Reish Lakish say otherwise? The answer is, Hani b'lecha de mesa shor v'nafal habayis. That's specifically when the item goes awry, it dies, it disappears, it collapses. So the item was destroyed, it's not in existence, so then I have to replace it. Mesa shor v'nafal habayis, the bull died, the house collapses, chayv l'shalom, he has to replace it. The lesson, because it's not it doesn't exist. So I haven't really fulfilled my obligation at all. Avalecha de isnu, but suppose it is in existence somewhere. Well, not in my pocket, the thief's pocket. That's irrelevant. Wherever it is, it's under Hashem's control. Nothing changes. Wherever he is, wherever the money is, it's still Hashem's treasury. So Hashem arts malaya. So I'm off the hook. Interesting. Okay, so let's just summarize this whole back and forth. Okay. Simple halacha would be by a nedava. Zoo, this is, that is, right? That's all I have to do. I don't have to deliver it. I'm not obligated. If something goes wrong, I don't have to replace it according to all opinions. Oh, what about a lie? Hare a lie. That's tricky. So if it's a korban, I'm certainly responsible all the way to the Beis HaMikdash. All agree. Gani ben dekabayis. Oh, that's a big machlokes. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, he's still chayev. So even though it's bedek habayis, but a lie makes it personal. He's responsible for its safety, and if something goes wrong, he has to replace it. Now, if it gets destroyed completely, we all agree he has to replace it, but if it's just missing, it was stolen or whatever, Rabbi Yochanan says he has to replace it. And according to Rish Lakish, Hashem Eretz Malaya, nothing happened, it's still in Hashem's possession, and therefore he doesn't have to replace it. Now, Omer Rav Nuna comes, Rav Nuna adds a new point. Hakol Moedim Be'erchin, all agree when it comes to Erchin, when he commits his value, which is delineated in the Torah based on age and gender, he donates value. Afakav Damar Allah, even though he used the word Allah, it doesn't mean personal. Olim B'chayiv is not obligated on a personal level. Doesn't have the strictness of a life. So in that case, as soon as he sets the money aside, he's no longer responsible. Why? Why would I say it's different? My time. Because there, the word Allah is not indicative of a deeper commitment. It's just that you can't say it without Allah. How could you say Erech without Allah? Hey, Chilema, how should you say? Lema Erech, you should say my value and stop there. Well, who's giving your value? Aman, who's responsible? Lema Erech Ploini, suppose he's speaking about the other person's value, you should say Erech Ploini. Erech Ploini what? Aman, who's responsible? So he has to add the word Allah. And therefore, it's not indicative of anything more than just a plain donation, rather than a full-fledged personal responsibility. Maskla Rava says, Rava, what do you mean? I have a word that he could use if he really wants to keep it simple. Leim Hareini Be'erki. Instead of a lie, say Hareini Be'erki, I am committed to my value. Hareini Be'erich Pleni, or to the other person's value. Vayitani, another kasha from a b'raisa, where it appears that a lie does carry that extra responsibility. This is a pasuk regarding redeeming property, and the pasuk makes an extra reference to erech. What's the point of mixing an erech to that pasuk? What's the point of the pasuk? Because we find elsewhere, Hegdashes, Maestras, we find by Hegdash items, or Maestras items, whose Kedusha gets transferred to money. And in those cases, if the money gets lost, you're not responsible. Nignavo Shavdu gets lost or stolen, and you're not responsible. We turn down the base. So that's a general rule. Yochel Afsakim, perhaps the same leniency applies to Erech money. So he committed his value, set aside the money, gets lost. Perhaps he's exempt. Comes the Pasuk V'nosen Se'erkech. He has to deliver the Erech money to teach us. Chulinin B'yadcha. Ad She'evoyu De Gizbar. It's not considered fulfilled until it's delivered to the Gizbar. It's your money until it gets delivered. So clearly, there is that added personal responsibility. He writes, says the Gemara, Itmachi, Itma, rather Rav Nuna stated his halacha differently. Amar Rav Nuna, Hakol Moedim Be'erchin, all agree just the opposite. When it comes to Erchin, the Avagav Delay Amar Allah, even without saying a lie, without that added implication, Machayev, he has to see it all the way through. Ensure that the money gets to the Gizbar safely. Dachsiv, because it is Pasig, V'nosin as Erkecha. Until you give it, it's not fulfilled. Chulnim B'yotcha, it's your private money. It's your responsibility, it's your obligation, and Shivoy the Gizbar until it's delivered to the Gizbar. So what are the parameters of Shluch HaKein? We'll go through the Pasuk word by word and analyze it accordingly. Ki Kari, Ki Kari, so the Pasuk entirely, its entirety reads like this. Ki Kari, Kansipu Lefonecha, if you encounter this bird nest, Baderech, on the road, Bechal Eitz, on a tree, Ola Oretz, on the ground, Efrech, my baits, and chicks or eggs, with the mother on top. Don't take the mother with the bonim. Next pasuk, shalayach to shalach asaim, rather send away the mother, and then take the bonim as a bonim to kechloch. And this will generate great reward. L'man yitav l'cho, you'll have good life, arach teyam, and long life. Interesting, there's a whole discussion. Some say that's a shiloh, whether it only applies when he's looking for the chick, he needs them. Or is it just a mitzvah to actually do it, even though you don't really have an interest in taking the banim? That's one interesting shayla. Another shayla to discuss is whether a person has to seek to be kind of mitzvah. It's really sort of intertwined, the two discussions. See, on the one hand, the pasuk says, go to shalech, to shalach, go do it. But it does say, ki kare, you'll chance upon it, you'll encounter it. They bring from the Arizal that it's a big Indian to do shalach hakein. In fact, we were in front of our house, we had this tree in the front, which is not really it's technically on the property, but it's not called a chatzar mishtamer. It's not really a safe and guarded area. It's open to the front lawn. In which case, it's called the hefker. It's not you know, under our control. It's ownerless and open to the public. So, perfect candidate for shlach ken. We ordered shlach ken on it. Pulled over a ladder. We sent away the mother. Took the picked up the eggs. And then eventually they hatched. So we. In order for a few people to do it, you have to actually make it hefker again, because once you lift it, you're zoich, and you have to put it down, say it's hefker, and then the next person does it. So it's all shaila. Well, the person has to go and actually go and seek to do it. Arizal Salatzev said it's a big Indian, and I know there are people that actually try. They, you know, they look for these opportunities. In any case, the pasuk does present it as a chance encounter. Right? Ki kare. Okay, so you encounter the Kantzibra Lefanach. Matam Uloimar. What is the Pasuk teaching by saying Ki Yikari? Oh, if you should remember, because in the next Pasuk it seems to say that it's an obligation. Shaleach to Shal, if you should remember, Shaleach to Shal, perhaps Yachshur Beharim. Oh, you should go look after the, go try to find yourself in Yachshur Beharim Mekvois, you should tour the mountains and the hills. Kadeshim Tzokin, to hopefully find a bird nest to fulfill the mitzvah. That's what I would think. Tamad Loimar comes to the pasuk, Ki Kari, Moir Lefanecha. Hashem presents you with this opportunity, fine, but you're not meant to. You don't have to go look around. Okay, next, Khan. Mikol Malkim Khan is telling you that even if it's a small nest, just one bird, one egg in there, the word Tzipor is Tahir, strictly kosher types. Like to me, as opposed to a non-kosher bird. As we're going to see later, the word tzipor, first a kosher type. The word lefanecha, b'rishus hayachid, so even if it's in a private, you know, b'rishus hayachid, in a privately owned property, again, it's not, it's open to all, it's not really controllable, but it's technically in a private area. So it's chayv shlo hakein. Baderech teaches us, b'rishus harab, likewise, if it's in a public domain, in the street, beilonis. Let's say it's up on a tree. Menayin, how do you know Yechayv? Tamalayim, b'chaleitz. B'chaleitz says on the trees. What about b'boira shichlam ors inside some pit, some side of cistern, cave? Menayin, what about over there? Tamalayim, ala oritz. Oy, ala oritz tells you even that. Okay, so once we covered everything, once we know that all locations are sort of treated equal, l'fanecha baderech lomeli, why does the pasuk start with l'fanecha baderech? Once it already says on the trees, on the ground, what's the point of the word l'fanecha baderech? Lemuel to teach us that there's a very critical condition here, a very critical element that's required. Ma derech, just like a road, she'en kini biyodcha. Okay, so the road is not in your possession. It's not privately owned. So the khan on the road is a ownerless entity, right? Not in your control, not in your possession. That is a precondition for shloach hakein. It can't be yours, it can't be controlled. Af kol she'en kini biyodcha, likewise. The mitzvah only applies to a nest which is not biyadcha, which is not accessible to you in control. Mikan Amar, we learn from here, examples of which, yoyne shoybech, yoyne aliyah, these pigeons who reside up in the birdhouse, up in the attic, shekinenu batzvichin, okay, which took nest in the camping out in the tzvichin, these containers in the walls, uabirois, or on the you know, mansions, Vavazim, the Tarnagoylim, Kinubapardis, another example of birds that are not really accessible and controllable. You have these ducks or these chickens who rebelled out, they're sitting out in the wild, and Chayav Mishilach, and all these cases are considered not yours, not owned, not controlled, not in your possession, and they're Chayav Shloch HaKim. But if you have these domesticated birds that come back home and sit in your house and they're fed there and they're accessible to you. Aval kidnu b'sechabais, but if they camped out in your house, and they're easily obtainable, v'chein yoyne hardisois, a certain type of pigeon which was raised by Yehurdus, we'll see later. Again, these are domesticated. Patam shiluach, in this case, there's no mitzvah because it's this similar to baderech. Baderech means it's hefker, it's not owned, it's not controlled. Amar ma'am. Okay, let's go back to the Brayis and review it. Ma derech she'en kinyan b'yadecha, av kol she'en kinyan b'yadecha. We compare it all to the derech, unowned, hefker, out of your possession. Halomali. Why do we need this special pasuk? Michi kari nafka. The words ki yikari already teach us that it has to be hefker. Ki yikari means problem mazumin, as opposed to something which is right there in front of you, owned. Void of nechalamli. Furthermore, why do we need the word of anecha to include even Rosh Hashanah Yachid? Well, what's the point? We already know all occasions are equal, provided the item is hefker and Elo. You're right. Lefanecha, the word of anecha teaches us like this. Lasuyed shoy lefanecha mordu includes a case. It's coming to include where it was really yours, and then the bird just disappeared on you, rebelled, took off. It's chayif, despite it had being originally in your possession. The word baderech teaches us interesting halacha. Kid Rav Yudah Marav, Damar Yudah Marav, Matzah Kan Bayam. Suppose he locates a nest mid sea in the water. Rashi says the storm came and fluttered off, dragged away a tree, and it's now growing mid sea, and there's a nest on it. Some say the same would be on a boat. Chayiv b'shiluach. Is a chayiv in shiluach shenemar. How do you know? It's in all the water. Kol yamar Hashem arisim b'yom derech. There's a concept of roots, of a derech, of a road in the ocean. The currents and the shipping routes, right? Concept of derech applies even in the water. El miyata. If that's the case, that sea qualifies because it has derech, what about Emol the sky, Matzah came by Shemayim. He finds a nest floating in the air, on top of a bird that's flying through the air. There is derech in the air as well. Ktichsiv derech nesha by Shemayim. The way of a nesha flies. Hachnami machayev b'shloch haken. So it's chayev. No, derech nesha ikri. It's not called plain derech. It's a derech of a bird. But derech stamali ikri doesn't have the plain connotation of derech. You know, the Rogachev explains, because at sea you have, shipping routes, you have the currents, you have the whole, it's like you have highways. Whereas in the air, you don't really have that. And that's why only at the Yam is it called derech. Amrle Papanoi, the people from Papanoi, interesting people, had a question. They asked the Rav Master some trivia questions. Matzo came Bereshish of Adamal. If we find a nest on top of a person's head. Omar, he says, of course it's chayiv. V'adam al reishah, a pasuk in Shmuel, describing a person with adama on his head. So it doesn't say afar, it says adama, uses the word adama to indicate that a person's adama. Adam, right? Adam is from the adama, from the earth. So the dirt on his head is still called adama, it's still connected to the adama through the person. It's one continuum. So it qualifies. It's called Ala Aretz. It qualifies for Shloch HaKein. Interestingly, the Urcha Shulchan mentions that in the Far East in India, you have these gurus, these people that are stuck in the ground and they don't budge for months in a row. They're meditating, whatever they're doing there, and they're just still like a piece of, like a log. And slowly but surely you have these birds, not realizing that it's a person. They just, camp out and they'll make their nests on him. So it's actually a pretty happening phenomenon. Okay, next question they asked him was Moshe ben Torah benai. Where do we find Moshe Rabbeinu who hinted in the Torah prior to his birth? Pasuk back in Bereishis, b'shagam hu basar. B'shagam, in its numerical value, is Moshe Rabbeinu Moshe, and the pasuk continues there regarding v'yom of meir v'esim shana, live 120 years, which is exactly how long Moshe Rabbeinu lived. What about Haman? Haman Arashim in the Torah. Where do you find a hint of Haman and his deeds in the Torah? Hamin Ha'etz, back in Bereishis. Hamin Ha'etz, from this tree. Hamin is Haman. Ha'etz is the tree that Haman was on. What about Esther? Esther HaMalkim in the Torah. Where do you find an indication to the events revolving surrounding Esther HaMalkim? Esther Aster, I'll hide my face, Hashem says. The time of Esther HaMalkim, the time of concealment, time of darkness, until the salvation came. Finally, Mordechai HaTzadik, in the Torah 9, where do we find him mentioned in the Torah? The Chsiv, we find by the list of the incense, of the ingredients in the Shemen HaMishcha. Pleasant-smelling ingredients, Mordechai. One of the ingredients is Mordechai HaTzadik, and the Unklus translates it as Mero Dachia, pure Mero. Dachia means pure. Likewise, Mordechai, right? Mero Dachia is like Mordechai. Mordechai was the Reish L'chol B'samim, leader of all the B'samim, the big Tzadik, disseminated his beautiful scent and his good deeds and his influence amongst the Jews of a generation. Rashi says, "Korle Reish leb'samim letzadikim." Rashi says, "Gadol is a leader of the tzadikim." Rashi says, "Gadol." Okay, so good to remember for Purim. Hol shtickel, no less chulim kuflam b'tes. Okay, ve'ezel she'ena mezuman. Examples of birds which are not considered mezuman. So the Mishnah gives us a list, as opposed to those that are considered more personal, more domesticated. One example of that would be Yoyne Har Desoy, these Herodian birds. Rav Chiya, Rav Shimon had a difference of opinion in terms of how to spell this their name. Tchatoni Hadrisoyz, he learned it as Hadrisoyz, Yoyne Har Desoy, the Dalet before the Reish. Tchatoni Har Desoy, Yoyne Har Desoy, the Reish before the Dalet. The more explains, Mandatoni Har Desoyz Al Shem Hurdus. Hardisois is based on Hurdus. Hardisois, because he's the one who initiated this whole. He would raise these birds, so they're called after him. Umandatoni Hadrisois. Hurdus, by the way, was a king. Was a really legitimate king. He killed out his, the Hashmonai family, who were his bosses, and he made himself king. Umandatoni Hadrisois. The other version, Hadrisois, Hashem Mekoyim, and they came from this place called Hadrisa or something like that. Amar of Kahana. Speaking about these unique birds, I myself witnessed, I noticed these birds who were descendants of the birds that Herdus raised. They were so big, they were standing in rows, 16 rows, with same mila, and each row was a mil wide, very big. And they were all chanting, Kiri Kiri. Okay, so I saw these birds. Yeah, don't say they were big. Whatever, the rows were very big, okay? And they were chanting. What were they chanting? Vakari Kiri Kiri. Kiri is a master, my master. Master, my master. Because that's how they were trained, to call out to Herdus, master, master. Havachad mena de lavakari. One fellow wasn't calling out Kiri Kiri, but the other birds. Amal Chaverta, so her colleague told her, the other bird calls, Suma, you blind one, you silly one. Imri Kiri Kiri. Chant along with us, Kiri Kiri. Amra, so she responded. She returned the insult. Suma, you silly one. Amri Kiri. The one that you call Kiri is really Biri, he's a slave. The Hurtas was really a slave. So the people around it, the descendants of Hurdus, were very insulted. Asyuba Shachtu, they took it and they killed it. Amar Ravashi, says Ravashi, Amali Rav Chanina Mil. Rav Chanina told me, this whole thing is just, sort of a fantasy, it never really happened. Milan Salkatayt, how could you suggest it's just words? I mean, Rav Kahana was personally testifying that he saw it. Ela'ema Bimilan, rather, what he meant to say is that this whole thing was orchestrated with sorcery, it was kishav, it's not a natural thing that birds would talk, and it was just a. It was a kishuv-based, event. They would train it with kishuv, and that's how they would get it to talk. Okay, the last final piece, we have oiv tamei potem shaleach, so it's a non-kosher bird, is exempt from shloha kein, which is limited to the kosher types. But not only that, how do we know that non-kosher is exempt? Amar bitzak l'makro, look at the pasuk, ki kara kan tzipor lefanecha, what's mean tzipor? What is tzipor? So the word oiv, Mashmal and Mentor Mentomi. Oif can refer to kosher and non-kosher. But Sipur is exclusively kosher. Toir, Ashkan, Dikr, Sipur. We only find that a kosher bird is called Sipur. Tomedly Ashkan, Dikr, Sipur. We don't find Sipur related to a non-kosher bird. Tashmai comes a kosher. From a pasuk where it seems otherwise. Pasuk and Devarim. Don't make for yourself an idol, a symbol of a bird for idol worship. Tavn is called Sipur Kanaf. My love, let's assume Sipur refers to both types of birds. Ben toy, ben tomei. The word kanaf is chagav and refers to grasshoppers. Loi, no. Tzipor, tar. Tzipor is exclusively the tar type. The kanaf means either a tommy bird or a chagav or grasshoppers. Tashmai comes another rai from the pasuk of Tehillim, which we say every morning, right? Achai, v'chobayim, rebbe, tzipor, kanaf. They all praise Hashem. So certainly includes all birds of all types, right? My love, let's assume tzipor means ben toy or ben tomei, whether it's kosher or not. V'kanav chagav, chagav means other winged creatures like grasshoppers. Loi, no. Tzipor means specifically the toher type, and kanav means tamei, the non-kosher birds, and v'chagav. Tashman comes another right from Pasim Bereshis, right? They came to the Teva, right, to Noyach. Called tzipor kan kanav. Let's assume my love. Let's assume makshin, as we asked before. Tzipor refers to both types. Loi, no, kumshanin, as we answered already. A tzipor is kosher only. Tashman comes another right from Pasim Necheskel. The birds will come and partake in the Mechemes Gog and Mogog, V'ata ben Adam, Emor, the Tzipor, kind of call out to the Tzipor. My love, let's assume Tzipor means Kedakshin, as we had asked, as we suggested, kosher and non-kosher, loy, no, Kedakshin, as we had already answered, Tzipor is kosher, and Kalkanov means non-kosher birds and grasshoppers. Toshman comes another kasha, we turn to the next page, Uvan Foy, Durin Tzipor Shmayam. So we have the vision of Nechadnetzar, and he saw this big tree, right? And amongst his branches, we have the Tzipor Shmaya dwelling all the birds, and we assume kosher and non-kosher. So as the Gemara, Tzipor Shmaya Ikru, Tzipor Stamalei Ikru, you're right. Here, there's an add-on, there's an added descriptive term, Tzipor Shmaya, the birds of the heavens, and that covers both types. But Tzipor Stama, plain Tzipor, like in the Pasuk of Shlach HaKein, Tzipor Stamalei Ikru, the kosher, not called, the non-kosher don't have that title, in which case, we learned that the tzipor shloha kein is limited to the kosher types only. Okay, let's recap the stuff. So the mugdashin is exempt. How do you get mugdashin and it's still considered hefker? Well, you're magdashin, then it took off and it still retains its hegdash status, but now it's exempt because of its hegdash status, which is exempted from shloha kein. Two variations of this halacha, although it was two variations. Either it was Kachabetz Beach that then took off and retains its Kedusha, or even Kachabetz Habayis still retains its Kedusha, Lashem Aretz Malaya, as per Biechna's Chiddush. It had ramifications regarding, you know, the determining level, extent of responsibility of the donor. Interesting, Machlaikas there. Do we apply this concept there as well? Konter Rish Lakish, yep. Rav Nuna added, when it comes to Erech, and all agree he's responsible till the very end, as per the Pasik. Okay, when do we have mitzvah shloch hakein? It has to be hefker, it can't be mezuman. Basically anywhere, private area, public area, even in the middle of the ocean, baderech, and even on top of a person. and it only applies to a tzipor, which is a tzipor tahira, as opposed to a tzipor tzmeah. To be continued. All the best, Yonat Zacharava.